ecosystem, to me, what I learned is it's kind of like chili. Everybody's got their own recipe, but we all call it chili. So you could put beans in yours and white chicken chili, and somebody can have vegetarian chili, but we all call it chili. So ecosystems, you know, are just made comprised of different ingredients. And it's just how are you going to feature that, those ingredients, and how are you going to, you know, maximize what you can do with the ingredients you have, but call it chili.
Hi, I'm Jacob Dolans.
And I'm Lauren Mathena, and this is the Rise Collaborative Podcast.
This is a podcast for dreamers, doers, and innovators in rural America. We believe entrepreneurship and innovation are key to leveraging our existing strengths to revitalize local economies and provide more opportunities for all people.
If you've ever wanted to go behind the scenes and learn how to spark innovation and build ecosystems, this is the podcast for you.
Through conversations with some incredible experts, we will guide you in leading the change you want to see in your regional economy.
As ecosystem builders in rural Southern Virginia, we're learning as we go, and we invite you to come along with us.
Eric, thanks for being on the show today. Do you want to introduce yourself with your name, title, and who you work for?
Sure. Eric Weissman, Executive Director of Next.
Great. Well, we're excited to have you. We have some starting questions that might be a little different. I think I gave you a little bit of a heads up, but could you think about five moments that have led you to where you are today? So that could be people, places, events, things that have happened. I'd love to hear about, you know, where you came from and how you got to where you are.
Sure. I came into this field of economic development and really supporting startups. And I wasn't a startup guy and more of a marketing guy. Worked for Fifth Third Bank for a good amount of time in Cincinnati. And prior to that, I worked for the Walt Disney Company, Disney Cruise Line Marketing. But when this opportunity came up with an organization called Centrifuge in Cincinnati, you know, originally I was kind of not standoffish, but I wasn't interested because I didn't consider myself an expert in that field. Come to find out over the past decade that, you know, entrepreneurial ecosystems need to have the founder at their core, and we always need to be founder focused and founder centric and surrounding them with the support that they need. But, you know, entrepreneurs want to entrepreneur. They want to move on to the next thing, or they want to get something started and then they need to get back to their shop. So it turns out that over the course of my career, I'd really been building up this muscle memory and attitudes around help and assistance and diplomacy, getting out of the way, making sure that the conditions are set and ripe for growth. So while I thought I wasn't qualified for it, it turns out that I had the best of both worlds. I could associate with that startup and small business mentality, being small and scrappy and resourceful and iterative, but at the same stretch, having a campaign mindset of which numbers are we trying to move and how long is it going to take for us to get there and what are the milestones along the way that we want to hit until those are achieved. And sometimes that's better for somebody who doesn't have that inherent ADD that keeps them, you know, bouncing around. So I think it's been a good progression of all the things that I've done over the course of my career to find myself in this position now. But it definitely wasn't something that I started off in school and said, you know what I'm going to do? I want to help startups. I want to help. I mean, we didn't even know what that word meant back when I went to school. We communicated with cave paintings and smoke signals and things like that. So it's way different now.
Well, this is a different direction than I thought we'd start with, but you said something really interesting, the campaign mindset. That's really cool. I haven't heard that. Could you talk more about that?
When you talk about, it doesn't have to be global, but you talk about large corporations. You know, at Disney, we were always talking about people taking vacations and at what point in the year are you deciding to take a vacation? Are you considering to take a vacation? Have you decided to, you know, all of those things, and what stage are you at and what area of the country are you in? And what do I hit you with if you're in Philadelphia? And, you know, when is the time that people in Philadelphia start to think about, are we going to go to the Adirondacks? Are we going to go to Central Florida? Are we going to go to Spain? What time of the year can we hit most of them? So that's what I mean when campaign, Fifth Third Bank, home equity loans, lines of credit, checking account, savings account. We're going to focus on savings accounts for this quarter of the year. So leading up to that, what do we need to do to make sure leading up to that, you know, working backwards to say the campaign start April 1st. I'm making this up. So what do we need to do on March 1st? What do we need to do on February 1st? So that's what I mean by campaign mentality of I've got a long, far off goal that is relatively achievable, not I need more customers. Great. How am I going to, where do I even start with that? But in those large corporations, you have those kind of divisions or departments or products that have these big goals that they want to achieve. So you set out to say, okay, let's do this. And what's it going to take? So now you bring that into the world of entrepreneur support. And, you know, even today, what is it, 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Monday, my day has been full of where do I want to focus my energy? And I could spend time updating HubSpot records. I could spend time talking to city council members on, you know, building relationships. I could spend my time on recruiting the next startup engagement manager that we need. My goodness, there's 7 different things that I could do. But what's the most important thing? And what do I want to set out to accomplish as an organization 3 months, 6 months, 1 year from now? And so to kind of chunk out your year in that way. Otherwise, you really get wrapped around, you have a tendency to get wrapped around the axle and focused on activity versus productivity. And sometimes, and there's a lot of startup founders that fall into this predicament, is they get confused that as long as I'm busy, that's good. And I at least can settle myself down that I'm getting something accomplished today, instead of taking a step back and saying, whoa. Let's not fill my calendar full of stuff. Let's get some brain time there and say, how do we want to grow and improve as a startup organization? So I try to bring that mindset to here to say there's never going to be a shortage of things to do. There's always going to be an entrepreneur that needs help. Just like Superman can't save every cat that gets stuck in a tree. You know, there's always going to be something to occupy our time. But what are the right things that we need to focus on? And what are the big numbers and big things that we want to move? And let's go tilt after those windmills.
So at Next, what are those big numbers that you want to move?
Well, at the end of the day, we, and I would hazard to say that this should be all entrepreneur support organizations, we should be about job creation. Now, that's not going to be linear. That's not going to be straight. And that's not going to be 1,500 jobs a year like some manufacturing or more traditional economic development, you know, is responsible for or has as their target. But at the end of the day, it should be about jobs. It should be about creating jobs and creating wealth, and not wealth for just the owner of the companies, but, you know, wealth for the community, wealth for the employees. So those are the needles that we want to move, jobs and creating jobs and creating wealth. There are some ancillary ways that you get at that. An example that I like to use a lot is, you know, how direct is our activity going to be to moving one of those big numbers of creating jobs or creating wealth? Are you familiar with the book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie? It's this kid's book of how this one little thing, if you give a mouse a cookie, he's going to want milk. And then if he wants milk, then he's going to want this. And then you're going to be fighting dinosaurs. You know, it goes into this big, long thing. You can't get too caught up in that. You know, well, if we want to create jobs, then it's got to start with, you know, who are we hiring? If we're starting about who we're hiring, then we got to start about what are they being taught in blah, 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 elementary school. Like, whoa. That is way too far down the, if you give a mouse a cookie line. Let's start talking about the companies that are here right now and who are doing some great things and for whom we could grease the skids, for whom we could just simply pick up the phone and say, how's everything going? Seems like everything is going well. Where could you use some help? You know, if the answer is not right now, then great, let's stay in touch. But there are people that are in the fight right now that are in the, you know, imagine coming up with a proverbial funnel of the companies that are having most success in your area, Greenville, for instance. And there will be, there's not going to be a ton, right? There's not going to be, even if you go to Austin, it's not going to be hundreds of companies that are doing well. There's going to be a few, maybe 20, that you want to draw a fence around and say, please don't leave. You know, how can we make sure that we stay connected with you? So focusing on them and then looking at from an ecosystem builder, you know, you're going to put that to the side and say, what are the trends? What are we seeing? What are we hearing from them that we're doing a good job at as a community? Where are we falling down? Where are the gaps in the ecosystem? And to assess those gaps, to have as much of an impact as you can with as little effort. If that makes sense. We don't want to just go have like unit task, one thing that we're doing for one company. It's occupying all of our time, because at the end of the day, then you just become the business development arm for that organization and you're an outsourced salesperson. Introduce me to some high net worth individuals that can be my I'd like to get into selling to Kroger or Procter & Gamble. And if you guys could do that for me, that would be great. Well, sounds like help. Sounds like that. But let's just go do that. But it's not scalable. So, you know, we got to come up with scalable ways so that you're not just a one-off, one-trick pony for one startup.
So you're saying the solutions that you try to develop to help one startup, you want that to be something you can use for multiple?
Ideally, it is still a, you know, an inverse pyramid. And at the top of that pyramid, you need to have the one-to-many programs and services and responses. We can't be in the business of listening to everybody's not fully baked idea on if they're in the entrepreneur stage. You know, there are other resources for those. There's a lot of online resources. There's, you know, other tools and other people in the ecosystem that they should be talking to. But as you filter yourself down, then you get to from one to many, you go to the one to few, and eventually you go to the one to one. You can't flip that, and you can't be one to one on this top, because otherwise you never run out of people to talk to. And that's where you get fooled by the activity of it's just me. And I got all these people I need to talk to. Wow. That's not productive. That's not what we need. If we could have scalable things at the top that lead us down to those one to few and one to one, that's what we're trying to convert into here. So you go from the general diaspora of startup interested people at the top of the funnel to now we're filtering down, and the topics that we're talking about are about scaling, about growing your team, about hiring your first salesperson, about, you know, these are things that are relevant to you if you've graduated just a little bit. Then you go down to, even after these workshops and classes, call it like 101 type of training and seminars, maybe you're right for an accelerator or something that's a more cohort-based, application-based, that you have your hand up. I kind of know the basics. I've demonstrated some traction. I maybe have a dollar or two. My uncle gave me $10,000. I've got a customer here. I think I'm onto something. I don't know what I don't know. I'd like you guys to help me. And, you know, in exchange for whether it's equity, whether it's just time, or whether it's just affinity, you know, you want to be associated, you want to be a little bit closer to the hoop. That's where that accelerator could come into play. And then you keep going down. So now I really need, I've proven, you know, as I keep going through these stages, that some outside investment would help, as opposed to getting my customers to fund my company, which is never wrong. It's just an alternative path, right? Venture-backed and venture-based startups are just one sliver of the whole entrepreneurial ecosystem. But as you keep going down, because remember, the first thing I started off with is we need jobs. We need those knowledge-based jobs. That's what we're looking for in these highly scalable, capital-efficient companies. That's not to say there's anything wrong with a microbrewery or a restaurant or a dance studio, but that's not scalable in the terms of from an economic impact, an overall economic impact that gets the state, the city, the region, the country involved, excited about the potential. So then we just try to layer up those services so that we're conserving our one-to-one time where it will be the most impactful and the highest return on that.
Yeah. So it seems like you were very successful at that with Centrifuge in Cincinnati. And it seems like, to go back to what you said earlier, you have that muscle memory of what worked there. But in the last year, you've stepped into a new community, which is different. You know, it's a smaller population, geographically situated differently. How did you take that muscle memory and the things you were just talking about and integrate it into your approach when you moved to Greenville?
Well, since my time at Centrifuge, I've learned a lot about startup support, let's call it that, which we now call ecosystem building. But there was no shortage of companies and organizations and cities, chambers of commerce that would come to Cincinnati to pick our brain and to say, how did you guys get these large corporations involved? And man, it would be great if we could learn a little bit about how. And then I started to pay attention through my association with the Rise of the Rest, the Steve Case-driven initiative to focus on the non-coastal cities and regions that, you know, 75% of all venture capital is concentrated in just three states, New York, California, and Massachusetts. So he did this initiative where we're going to barnstorm the middle of the country. And we were, Cincinnati was on stop number one, tour number one, stop number three. So that woke me up to this other people doing what we're doing here. And I wasn't alone. There was somebody in Indianapolis. There was a group in Dallas. There was somebody in Phoenix. You know, all of a sudden you start to pay attention to there's an ecosystem there, but they don't have Procter & Gamble. What are they doing? Oh, they're rotating it around sustainability or around, you know, getting a university that's involved. Oh, gotcha. What's Indianapolis doing? They're the capital of the state, blah, blah, you know, all this sort of stuff. So ecosystem, to me, what I learned is it's kind of like chili. Everybody's got their own recipe, but we all call it chili. So you could put beans in yours and white chicken chili, and somebody can have vegetarian chili, but we all call it chili. So ecosystems, you know, are just made comprised of different ingredients. And it's just how are you going to feature that, those ingredients, and how are you going to, you know, maximize what you can do with the ingredients you have, but call it chili. You know, don't try to disguise it. I know what you're trying. Oh, I see. You're leveraging this, that, or the other thing. So it was a matter of coming down here into this pantry and saying, all right, what do we got? What are our assets? What have we been doing well? And really what I'm trying to institute is this community, this ecosystem mindset, this startup Greenville attitude that we're all under this umbrella. We're all here and we're all trying to make this region more successful. That's it. Like that's at its core. That's what we're trying to do. And we're going to do that by fostering entrepreneurship and innovation. So we next are an integral part to the strategy of the city, the county, the Chamber of Commerce, of how are we addressing these small, scalable, high growth, high potential companies that aren't United Community Bank, that aren't Procter & Gamble, but they may be the next Kroger or the next Michelin in the supply chain of Michelin. And, you know, the nearshoring of that, this has been very real in the past, you know, few years for sure. You know, in short, just doing an assessment of what are the ingredients and really what are we trying to cook? Who are we trying to feed? What's the outcome that we want to do and that we want to have come to fruition? And really, what's the scorecard? What are we watching? What number are we watching? And how are we going to know when we got there? Just imagine going to a baseball game and, you know, everybody's watching the scoreboard in left field because you want to see those numbers move, but everybody's cheering for some other activity that's happening, you know, onto the sideline. Wait a second, I thought we were here to make the score runs. I thought we were here to see those numbers move. So that sort of alignment here of, you know, we should all be wanting to move two or three numbers for our region. I'm sorry, I meant our region of the state, for the state, and then for the region of the country. So for us, it's Greenville, the upstate of South Carolina, South Carolina, the Southeast. So that's like the hierarchy. And where do we rank? Where are we at? You know, right now we're 8 out of 9 Southeastern states in terms of venture activity over the past 10 years. Are we okay with that? Do we know that? Do we know that we're 8 out of 9? Yeah, where were we in the past? Were we fourth? Were we third? Did we move down? Have we stayed the same? So just bringing that attitude of what are we trying to accomplish? Are we trying to make the Olympics? Are we trying to win some regional event? Or do I just want to be the fastest dad in the block party, you know, three-legged sack race? You know, what race are we running here? And let's try to focus our efforts to winning that.
So something that I've seen from doing some research on you is that you're a bridge spanner. And so we can riff off of the chili metaphor. So thinking about that, like you go into these places and find new ingredients and use them in different ways than other people have used before. So I know that you had affiliations with university, right? But then you're doing the work in the community as well. That's not always the case, right? Like folks aren't doing both. Can you talk more about kind of the intersections of those things?
To me, it still does get back to that. Nowadays, we call it design thinking. You know, starting with the end in mind and who's your real customer and what are we trying to accomplish? Yes, our customer is the entrepreneur, the founder, and their team of these high growth startups. But there's a lot of stakeholders that should be engaged and involved. That's the city. the county, you know, and depending on how your jurisdictions are, there's some sort of governmental entity, because you can't show me a city in the world that says we don't support entrepreneurs. Nah, we're good. Happy with everything is. They can fend for themselves. No one is going to say that. So it's a matter of getting them engaged and involved, and then the amount of service providers. Those look like attorneys, accountants, bookkeepers, design firms, web design firms, copywriters, HR, staffing solutions. You know, that's a matter of engaging them into this ecosystem, because you probably wouldn't be surprised, but some people are surprised that, you know, when you go to start a business and you say, let's open up a, you know, we're going to have this storefront on Main Street and we sign the lease. And then now, where do you get furniture from? Oops. I'd be great if I could talk to somebody who has done this before and can learn from them. Where do you buy desks from? And where do you get? So from a service provider standpoint and a community standpoint of talking to each other about how they've faced and overcome some of these same challenges. So I guess you could call it bridge building, but to me, it's a matter of educating and saying, you know, we're all culpable and responsible for this. And here's, when we have success, here's how you'll win too. Being able to illustrate that and not just pigeonhole companies, smaller companies to say, you're small potatoes, you're never going to amount to as much as these people pay my bill. And you know, breaking some of that down, I think is important. And the more blurry lines in the Venn diagram that we can have, the better, I think, so that law firms understand that you need to have a division in your firm that focuses on these high growth companies. One, it's important for the community. But second thing, it's important for your own personnel to stay up to speed on stuff and to stay, you know, a little bit closer to the campfire on what's coming down the pipe and what are some innovative ways of that people are solving these problems. So to me, it's just a matter of communicating to the greater community that here comes the ecosystem, right? That we're all tied together. And ecosystems in nature, think of a rainforest, it's not all just tall trees. There has to be stuff on the ground level, and they feed off of each other. And then there's got to be animals that go in between. And it is really a cycle. So we can't just be only big co town. And that was the premise. That was a strategy of Centrifuge, was these large global corporations banded together and say, the future of Cincinnati is not going to be us. We're here. Our headquarters are here, but there's always some activist shareholder or, you know, somebody that's saying eliminate middle management, or so-and-so's got to cut 10,000 jobs this year. Uh-oh, that's not a recipe for growth. So finding out the ways that we can not forget those smaller companies that have a lot of potential and are actually, when you add them up, contributing quite significantly to the GDP of the country, really, but of any city. And I don't know the stats, you guys may know this, but you know, how many people in America, I think it's over 70% of Americans work for companies that have 5 employees or less. I mean, it's a big number. So anyway, just kind of exposing the ecosystem to those realities.
So I think everything that you just said is kind of the right thing to us, right? Because we're ecosystem builders and it feels natural, and that kind of just reflects on the analogy itself. But where there are, I guess, skeptics, or I don't know if skeptics is the right word, but I guess where there's kind of resistance to working together, could you share maybe some experiences you've had in kind of creating better relationships among support organizations, or even, you know, across the broader field of economic development? I feel like currently, you know, coming off of, or, you know, through the pandemic, just the integration and acceptance of small business and entrepreneur support across all stages seems to be, it's much more accepted now than it was 2 or 5 years ago. But kind of, I guess, one, do you think that kind of positive energy that mm-hmm. you can trust everyone to support entrepreneurs, do you think that is going to be continued? But kind of also wondering if there's any lessons learned you could share.
No, I think it will continue. And, you know, just last week, two very real examples of, and ironically, both companies were headquartered in Australia, but they're looking at our city and region, but our city specifically, to grow and to be the North American hub for their efforts. So let's put this wrapper on this subject will be, there are no wrong front doors to the ecosystem. And that's what people are now realizing. These both came through very traditional pathways to, I want to expand my company into your region, you know, kind of ring the doorbell. What do you got for me? And were it not for the prominence and the elevation that we're trying to put on venture funding, tech and tech enabled companies, scalable, the talent that wants to work for a scalable rocket ship type of company, when, and I've seen this in my past, where they come in these traditional doorways, and this company was, this is a previous example, was looking for, they were a fintech startup from the West Coast, and they were looking for something on the other side of the Rocky Mountains for their headquarters. So they talk to our traditional economic development groups and say, I'd like to see a Series B company that's in fintech, that's, you know, scaling. This is all gibberish. It'd be like me talking, you know, Mandarin to the, you know, you need to have somebody that speaks startup. So here, it happened 2 days in a row. One was organic and one was had come through a traditional way. But here are these companies that were venture-backed and looking for people that looked and talked and acted and wanted the same things that they're looking for. So they bring in next to say, oh, geez, you know, you guys speak startup, you know, and eventually we'll learn the language. Eventually we'll have a Fitbit type of ecosystem display that will allow people to sing from the same songbook, as it were. But that's an exercise that is not going to go away. The great migration, the great resignation, whatever you want to call it, that disrupted, even more so disrupted the economic development field, because now remote working is a distinct and very real possibility. So now gone are the metrics where you said, you're going to come to my city and you're going to bring your 150 employees, you know, that work at this call center. Well, there's a call center down the road from us here that doesn't have anybody in it anymore. It's 50,000 square feet of empty space, because they can call from home now. They don't need to be in the same spot. So now those metrics and those scorecards that states rely on from an incentive standpoint, and don't get me wrong, I am not the expert at this, and I don't know what levers states should throw in incentives and all that sort of stuff, but the game has changed. So now we do need more people that speak startup. We do need more people that understand the value of a nimble and agile workforce. And you want your city to be the most fertile ground and the most fertile soil for that. So it's a little bit different of saying, I want you to declare this as your headquarters city, and therefore I can assume that all 150 or 149 of your colleagues are going to move with you. I want to declare this as your headquarters city, but I understand that maybe we can agree that your leadership team will be centered here. Maybe we can agree upon 25% of your annual offsite will be held here. You know, there should be some negotiating there of what it means to woo and to retain one of those companies that is not necessarily as tethered as they once were just a few short years ago.
I heard something last week about a stat that among people who are looking to move within the next 36 months, the, you know, over 50% were going to move first and find a job later.
Wow.
Yeah, it's definitely very different. And then we also have Gen Z, which I don't, you know, as a millennial, I think looking forward to the impact of a new generation into the workforce. So,
yeah.
So do you think that the game of business attraction will organically become more about talent attraction?
Yes. I think that if I look at startups needing three things, pretending there's only three things, talent, customers, and money, those are the top three. Customers will always be the most important, because without a customer, you don't have a business. If nobody's paying, you know, then there has to be some commercial aspect to it. But I think talent is right up there. because you need to grow and scale, and you need to find other people to join your team and your tribe, and the money will flow. The money should follow that if you have a solid customer base, if you've got good talent and got a good plan and an organization in tow. But you know, the money is an issue too. Of there's still these some paradigms of I want to be able to drive to my investments, or I want to be able to lower some of those inhibitions that prevent me from, you know, you just the days where we're not that far away from the days where VCs would require you to be within the city that they were investing from because they wanted to see you and interact and engage. I think those things are loosening up. I know they are at certain scales and in certain industries, but I think we still got a challenge there from some of that. Those capital markets are locked in geographically, but the talent is what's going to drive everything. If the talent says, you know what, keep your money then. I want to be in Greenville because I'm an hour away from the mountains and 3 hours away from the beach, and it's not big. And I can get to my kids' soccer games, and I can be involved in the community here, and I don't have to get in line at, you know, whatever Sand Hill Road, the, you know, proverbial epicenter of venture capital in the West Coast. So I think talent is going to dictate a lot of that. And I think people are going to select with their laptops of where I want to work from. And then we're going to have to follow that. We being the, you know, the ecosystem builders of saying company isn't headquartered here, but you are, and I kind of want your next thing to be here. So let's involve you in the community, even though you're not the founder, even though you're not the CEO, you're demonstrating that you want to be a part of this ecosystem. So I want to be here when you're ready to start your own thing.
So that was tied into my question. That's a great transition. So thinking about kind of our work as ecosystem builders and the talent attraction, what makes a place good and what are elements that we can be thinking of in advance to attract people to the towns that we live in? So working collaboratively with community development organizations, I think a lot, you know, how can we leverage our recreation assets or this or that? Like, where does that overlap for you? And I've seen a lot of, it looks like Greenville is really focusing in on a lot of like recreational infrastructure, and it looks really cool from what I just researched. Could you talk more about kind of that interplay?
Yeah. I'm going to use a word that has a lot of different connotations and can be a buzzword and can also be kind of polarizing, but it is about diversity. And I don't mean just gender, race, diversity. I also mean age, type of business. If it's all life sciences, not very diverse. If it's all white guys and software, not very diverse. And so diversity is appealing. That's what I mean. Boulder is very attractive and has been very attractive from a lifestyle standpoint of I want to be able to go hike and bike and kayak and, you know, hang out with my friends in the morning. Then I'll come in and I'll bang out some work until 6 or 7. Then we'll go, maybe if it's still light outside, we'll do more of the same or go to a concert or what. You know, so from a lifestyle standpoint, there are people that want to get in at 8 o'clock and leave at 5. And there are, so having that diverse mix, I think will be increasingly important into cities of the future. And so I think size matters too, is that we don't need to be just some benefits to having a city or a community. Once you get to be a certain size, then you get a professional baseball team. Then you get to be a certain size and you get a hockey team, and then you get a certain size and like, okay, now we're a major league city because we have a museum and we have this. I think some of those traditional norms, especially on the arts and culture side, are going to be challenged as we change up this, the idea of a city. But people are all going to want to do something different besides work all day. And also, I don't want to just go spend all day in the woods. I'd really like to have a mix of that. So I would say that diversity is going to be important. The various textures of that or concentric circles work out from that. I also want to see people who aren't like me. I also want to see people who are like me. You know, like all of these things can, you know, it has to be a good mix or melange of what makes an ecosystem, you know, back to that tall trees. can't all be just one thing. So I really think that diversity will matter.
That really resonates with me. I worked in Brevard, North Carolina for a summer. So yeah, not that far north of you guys. I worked as a rock climbing guide. So like, you know, you want to go climbing on world-class granite, but you also want to see art, you know, and have good food. So at least that resonates with me and what I look for in a place. So
I know a great town called South Boston, Virginia, that has one brewery and two great coffee shops. And so I think that, you know, like the number of, or, you know, how we quantify what makes a great place certainly is changing.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that.
All right. So we have a list of rapid fire questions because we do want to be respectful of your time. They're not really rapid fire. They're actually like kind of in depth. So that's why we're starting early. But we'll start. What is a daily habit or routine that you have that you'd recommend to others? So how do you find the balance? What do you do outside of work or integrate into work that keeps you going?
Some of the balance, some of the discipline stuff is that I'm not as good at as I used to be. But when I was at Centrifuge, when we started, I had to drop my son off at school very early. So I was the first one in, like 7:30 in the morning is when I would get in. And you know, the first couple of times it's painful, but then after a while, I was obviously the first one in for like an hour. So that's when I already subscribed to a lot of newsletters and I try to stay abreast and stay curious. That would be one of the things that I try to encourage others to, you know, be curious and find out what Knoxville is up to and what Brevard is up to. And so I would read these newsletters in the morning. And by the time everybody got in, I was ready to go because I had done all my BS stuff, you know, for the hour ahead of time. But I do try to compartmentalize some of that to say, you know, don't get too sucked in throughout the day. Remember, this is your morning thing to do. So throughout the day, you got to have discipline and move that stuff off. But I don't know, there's plenty of different productivity hacks to, you know, you can Google 1,000 of them, but it does come down to discipline. It does come down to saying, you know, on Wednesdays is the day that I'm going to look at my LinkedIn page and follow people and seek out folks. But man, if I try to do that every day, you'd just be down a rabbit hole. So yeah, I think that's one of the things that I try to do is, you know, stay abreast of things, but really cordon off that time so that you don't get sucked into it.
Fan of time blocking, and yeah. You do have to hold yourself to it, but that's a good example of turning, I guess, a reason to wake up early into a good thing.
It was great.
What is one book or resource that you would currently recommend to entrepreneurs?
A friend of mine at the Kauffman Foundation, his name is Andy Stoll, who is leading their eShip initiative. And as we talk about ecosystem building as a thing, it's a practice, it's something people can be good at. And this was really an inspiration for me to co-developed a course at Miami University on ecosystem building as a thing. And I still teach one of the classes and they involve me, you know, throughout remote now, but it's about systems engineering or systems leadership. And it's a book called Team of Teams by General Stanley McChrystal. And it goes through about, you know, how this new rules of engagement, and he's talking about it from a wartime scenario, which is, you know, not the best, you know, way to learn something, but it's really that the days of command and control are over, that we can't continue to think that top-down methodology is going to work. It really is about communication, about making sure that everybody's dialed in and is getting trustworthy and credible communication. I'm looking for a graphic here that kind of goes through the process, but Team of Teams mentality takes it from command and control at the top to then a command of teams and then being a team of teams, and understanding how that concept works in our world is important. And I don't know if that's more for ecosystem builders than it is entrepreneurs, but for our world, from an ecosystem building standpoint, it lays a lot of good points out there.
That's a great book recommendation. I'm going to order it immediately after this. Thank you. Okay, what's your favorite restaurant at the moment, and what do you recommend others order?
My favorite restaurant that you're just putting me on the spot, but my favorite restaurant is Home Team Barbecue here in Greenville. They're actually out of Charleston, and they have a Greenville location. pulled pork is reliable. It's always really good. Another one is so all barbecue, but there's a food truck called Moo Hogs. And talk about entrepreneurial. So this guy is a principal of Tanglewood Elementary School. And on Fridays after school, he goes home, starts the fire, puts the brisket in, it's Texas style. So he puts the brisket on and it's a truck. He early Saturday morning, he pulls it up into this brewery place called Hampton Station. And when it's gone, it's gone. And you need to get there about 11:30 or you're not going to get anything. So that's really good. So those are my two favorite. I like the brisket from Moo Hogs and the pulled pork from Home Team.
Well, you're making me hungry. All right, last rapid fire. And then if Jacob will allow it, I have one more question that I meant to ask earlier. So last rapid fire question is, who is someone, a thought leader or someone in the entrepreneur support or industry that you recommend other people to check out?
So, you know, some of the people that I admire in this field of ecosystem building are the practitioners, you know, the ones that are out there trying different things. You guys mentioned Startup Champions Network. That's a good group of folks. And, you know, just it's a matter of finding them and finding the tribe. I think any ecosystem or startup community list is incomplete without including Brad Feld onto that list and Ian Hathaway, who is also a thought leader. And also, you know, two guys that I've stayed in communication and in contact with as I've grown through and become a student of these ecosystems. Chris Hively is another one, also in that kind of Techstars realm. And now he's doing some things down the road in Columbia, South Carolina. So I got the good fortune to spend even more time with him. And then Andy Stoll. I really like what Andy is bringing to and brought to the Kauffman Foundation. And trying to shake things up as much as it can there for an organization that is, you know, $1 billion of an endowment, you know, Scrooge McDuck money, just, you know, to support entrepreneurs and startups. I really admire that. You know, things changed. The world changed 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, when everyone had declared that it started. But we're still figuring out. And I think everybody's waking up to this, what world we're in now. I think a lot of people have to relearn how to small talk, how to network, and how to be together. But that's what ecosystem builders do. And, you know, we're running events, we're talking to people, we're always, you know, mining for information and looking for that, panning for gold and waiting for that nugget to appear and then taking that nugget and showing to somebody else, this is the nugget you're looking for. And I think that, you know, the more folks that you can find that are doing that stuff, because ecosystem builders, as we know, it's not a thing that you, until now, you can't go to school for that, right? You couldn't go to school for that. It's something that you became, but even your title isn't, I mean, my title is executive director. I was community relate or what was it, external relations. And, you know, you don't have the title of ecosystem builder. You just are one. And I think that the more we can designate, which is what we do at our class at Miami, is designate people as ecosystem builders, even though they're the general manager, or the managing director of the startup accelerator, even though they're the executive director of an incubator, even though they're the junior analyst at a venture fund. You're all ecosystem builders. Why? Because your mind is wired to make connections and to focus on that end of just wanting good things to happen for your community.
All right. So my question that I wanted to ask you earlier. So how important is sustainability to an entrepreneur support organization?
Financial sustainability is critical, obviously. I think that my philosophy has always been that the philosophy that I've been ingrained in my head is to be a nonprofit, right? To have that kind of servant leadership, heart of a servant attitude. We're not a traditional nonprofit. You know, the Friends of the Reedy River get together and take, you know, tires and stuff out of the river that goes, you know, like that's a traditional nonprofit. Homelessness and childhood poverty, all those are more traditional nonprofits. And in my experience, there's usually, it's easy to tap into the philanthropic hearts of your community by leading with those type of initiatives. It's easy for somebody to say, I see what you're doing, you're trying to. When it comes to entrepreneurship, then they put the checkbook away of, you know, well, wait a minute. You know, there should be an element of startup Darwinism here, right? If you're so good, shouldn't you, why do you need my help? But to me, it's that element of the community growth and community involvement that startups and the company, the people that want to work for them and the people that want to work alongside them and the people, the companies that are, you know, in that second rung of support, whether they're lunch places or dinner places or coffee shops that are around, everybody benefits. A strong startup ecosystem benefits everyone. It makes it easier for BMW to hire people. It makes it easier for Kroger to have a robust, innovative ecosystem from which to pull from. When you look at it that way and say, look, I'm not trying to capitalize or make money off of these companies. In fact, I'm trying to increase the odds of their success. And with us at the helm, we're going to get there faster. That's what I try to get across. And to me, my strategy, the crux of that is accountability, measurement. Who's telling you what's working and what's not? Sure, we can talk about how, you know, the great news, the happy ears type of stuff for the ecosystem, but who's the one that says, look, I just got back from the coal mine and I got three dead canaries. I think somebody needs to tell you. Is no one telling you that this is an issue? So when you present that to that blindside protection, that we're going to be the ones that are in our instance here, you know, trying to keep tabs on our peer cities, whether it's Chattanooga or Nashville or Winston-Salem or Birmingham or Bentonville, you know, like who can tell me how many female founders are in the region? What's the percentage of outside capital that comes from outside? Like, shouldn't we know that? Is nobody telling you that we're not getting any money from, and I don't know if this is, it's not true, but let's say like, oh my gosh, we're not getting any money from North Carolina. Like no North Carolina investors are investing in South Carolina companies. Did you know that? And again, this is hypothetical. It's not true. But just imagine that you could find that out and say, well, why is that? Well, let's start asking people. And that's what an ecosystem builder does. We're not going to say to the founders that say, oh, go get money from Winston-Salem Angels. And they go up there and Winston, they say, no, we're not investing. Oh, well, why did they say that? Well, I don't know. You find out, Eric. I got to go find somebody that's going to invest in my. Okay, great. We'll go up there and say, hey, look at the portfolio of your companies that you invest in. Really look like a lot of companies that I see here. Talk to me a little bit about what's missing from our ecosystem. Who's doing that? That's what we need to be. That somebody needs to be there. Somebody needs to be advocating for that. Otherwise, we're going to get lapped, right? Like we're tied to a pole, like just, you know, stick in the mud. So when you approach that way of accountability and measurement and growth mindset, that is an appealing message to anybody else who cares about growth and financial sustainability for your viability for your ecosystem.
So we feel like if an ESO can show a high return on investment for the community overall, then, you know, having earned income is not necessarily feasible or an expectation. You're still accounting on really, you know, corporate and philanthropic support in some aspect.
Yeah, you can't just be a party planner, right? We can't just be like, but this is what we need. And isn't like, where is it leading to? And I have worked for some people that are addicted to accountability. I'm sorry, allergic to. They're allergic to accountability. And, you know, that's the thing is that it can't be because you have to be accountable. And sometimes it is tough. Things aren't going to move every month. They're not going to move every 6 months. But over time, 5 years, you start to move down this road. So if I want to train for a marathon, if I want to run a marathon, I'm not just going to go out and run 26 miles tomorrow, right? I'm going to run one, and I'm going to run five, and then I'm going to, you know, these weeks, how's everything going? If my knee's falling off, move up to the next chunk. And then over time, you're like, holy crap, look at that. I can keep moving for a long time, but I started off down here. So there are milestones that you hit along that way. It's not just that you wake up and you turn around and you're like, look at that. I ran a marathon. Didn't think I was going to do that. It's incremental.
Well, thank you, Eric, so much for sharing your time and your wisdom and your story with us today. We appreciate it. And we'll be listening to this replay ourselves and seeing what we can learn and take into our work in Southern Virginia.
On one last note, can you tell our listeners where they can find out more about you or the work you do?
So we are launching a new website. but nextsc.org. So Next South Carolina, sc.org is the best place. We try to stay active on social media too. So you can follow us on LinkedIn, and Twitter would be the main places. That'd be great.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Rise Collaborative podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review on your podcast app or share this episode on social media.
You can connect with us on LinkedIn. We'd love you to join the dialogue, get connected to the network, and learn more about SoverEyes and the people and the places that we work. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next episode.